Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Look who showed up to the Ford Center at the Star in Frisco yesterday. Micah Parsons attending the voluntary off-season program, as Brian Schottenheimer said he expected. Previous 2 years, Micah mostly worked out on his own before OTAs and minicamp. Of course, he's entering the fifth-year option of his rookie deal, still without the monster extension. Good morning, Metroplex. This is your official home of the Dallas Cowboys, in case you did not know, with Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and our Cowboys insider, Bobby Belt. And you made me pause and hesitate yesterday when you sent over the message that you thought this was a mistake for both sides.
Well, look, I understand it's not OTAs, it's not minicamp. This is not even a glorified walkthrough. They're in underwear.
What are voluntary workouts, Bobby? What do they do out there for this?
When they go to, this is not even the OTA stuff, which we normally have access to. So we don't even get media access to this. This is basically, it's largely player-led, but they've got, I think there's limited amount of interaction every day they can have with coaches, and it has to be limited to, like, literally, like, meetings on a whiteboard and maybe slight on-field instruction, but it's very narrow. This is mainly a lot of just voluntary, independent work.
So this is more about, like, the end of May when they get to OTAs, but in general, this guy trips, stubs his toe, get him out of the building. Get him out of the building. I don't want him in the building. If I'm on the team. I don't. If he gets hurt, you're
why would you not want him in the team if you're in the building if you're the Cowboys?
Well, because if he gets hurt, He gets hurt in your building. Does that make anything guaranteed? You're gonna have to pay him either way. I want him nowhere near a football field until he signs that contract. I don't want any Sean Lee OTA knock on Corey in situation. None of that. Because if he gets hurt, he's out for the year. You're gonna have to sign him into a new contract, or you're not. You have no idea what he's going to be like coming off that injury.
So you don't even want him working out on his own. You want him sitting on his couch or doing his podcast.
No, he can work out. I mean, work out.
Yeah, why would you not want to supervise him working out versus him doing judo?
Well, who says, is he going to do judo?
Well, he did last year.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever.
Sumo wrestling.
Sumo wrestling. That's what I said. I have no problem sumo wrestling. but no, this is more from like an on-the-field standpoint. Like in the weight room, you want to get supervised, whatever. Not a problem with that. I assume a lot of these guys have their own trainers
This is the exact description of the offseason program, according to the NFL, like what's allowed. Phase one consists of the first 2 weeks of the program with activities limited to meetings, strength and conditioning, and physical rehab only. Phase two consists...
That's what they're in right now. Fine.
Phase two consists of the next 3 weeks of the program, which is on-field workouts, may include individual or group instruction and drills, as well as perfect play drills and drills and plays with offensive players lining up across from offensive players and defensive players lining up across from defensive players, conducted at a walkthrough pace, no live contact or team offense, and then it's OTAs.
Yeah, you got no contact. I'm cool. What you don't want is him to go out there, and he gets hurt, and now you've got to sign him, and you have no idea what he's going to be like when he comes back from that injury, whatever it happens.
I'm giving Micah his props. There's two ways to look at it. There's the player leadership angle, and there's the business agent angle. If I'm the agent, I'm probably not wanting him to show up. Mike Florio has been screaming for 2 years he shouldn't even have shown up last year to put the screws to the Cowboys. Micah had to do this to follow up what he's been talking about since the end of last season. Tank Lawrence is gone. It's my team now. I don't need all the money. I'm willing to take less. I want guys around me. New coordinator, new head coach, new system, new teammates. If you're going to talk about being the new leader, you got to show up to day one, Aaron Rodgers. So as a Cowboy fan, there's no reason for you not to be thrilled and happy about this. And I think Micah had to do it to back up what he's been talking about in terms of locker room presence. David Mulligetta, agent, probably not. But I don't care about all that. I care about the Cowboys and the chemistry.
You'll be around that? You want to be around that?
A C for the training staff.
Yeah, you want to be around that?
I would bet.
Go to a Planet Fitness, get your lifts in.
I would bet David told him to go, is what I would guess. And I don't know that he would normally say that if it was like mini camp or if this was real contact stuff. But I bet David, knowing what the Cowboys are going to approach, like how they're going to approach trying to reduce value in these negotiations, is going to be stuff with where's your maturity, where's your leadership, where are you at in terms of leading by example. And so I would guess, yeah, David's like saying, hey, these are meetings, it's lifting, it's all stuff you need to do. It's stuff you normally do on your own.
Yeah.
You're normally doing these things, you're just on your own. Just go show up to it right now. And while we continue to do this, because you don't want them coming right back and going like very day one, you're not even in there. Because that's what they're going to try to do.
Is this one of Jerry's cards to be played that he mentioned in reference when he's like, I might want to see a few more cards played?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Some were speculating, including Nick Harris, that maybe it was showing up to be the leader, showing up for, you know, some of these extra credit things. And maybe this is a Jerry card and this will pacify and satisfy Jerry so that we can finally maybe get the ink pen out.
Maybe it does. Maybe it does pacify him a little bit. Yeah, again, like this is more like, you know, on-field OTA stuff. Stay the hell away. But yeah, it, like this is a good leadership role for Micah to show up there. And I think Bobby's point about the agent saying, hey, you know, just go there. You're going to do it anyway. You'll be doing it on your own. Because a lot of these guys work out on their own anyway. You're going to be working on your own anyway. So why not?
Well, why not would be you're doing the Cowboys a favor by playing along with their program versus creating more pressure on them with negative headlines and sports talk topics and creating, it would create some discomfort. Mm-hmm. You could argue you're doing them a favor by showing up and playing nice.
I honestly think they feel like we've caused them enough pressure and discomfort already by getting in the way of those negotiations you thought you had done at a dinner. And we've done enough to sit here and put public pressure on them by clearly making it known that they weren't doing things the right way. And now they have to. And they were salty about it when they were in those league meetings. And so,
well, things haven't been done enough to get a deal done.
No, but I mean, I think that what you would see typically the clients for David Mulligetta, when they are on the fifth year option and they're up for a new deal, they do not show up. That's generally what they don't do when it comes to OTAs, minicamp, things like that. I don't always know during the voluntary portion, this kind of thing, which doesn't even have media coverage. I don't know how consistently those guys show up. But this is one where if you are considered one of the leaders of a team in any of the 32 clubs across the league, you show up to these kind of things. And so I would imagine this is just about, hey, show up, check a box. You're in town. You live there. make sure they're not giving us anything that they can go against, and I'll get you your money.
Mike Florio added, in the short term, Parsons' presence plays into the Cowboys' hand. It also makes an eventual training camp holdout more jarring if Parsons stays for all the offseason practices and doesn't show up when training camp stops. That's what Zeke did in 2019. We'll see if Parsons does the same.
Lamb showed up to the early, this kind of stuff early on last year, and then didn't show up to OTAs or the other stuff.
And Dak showed up to all.
Dak always shows up, yeah. Dak has never missed that kind of stuff.
I also think that, you know, everyone is different. Everyone's going to get different contract advice. It sends a nice little message. Oh my God, Micah Parsons, like, his deal is up. Everyone knows he's next to get paid, and he still showed up. Whether it's Deron Bland, whether it's Tyler Smith, whether it's someone down the line, Dak Prescott sends that message all the time when his deal is in flux. So, you know, with all the little side check mark things for leadership and locker room, I give Micah credit.
Well, and I think the idea is also here, I would guess that the counsel that Micah Parsons is getting is, you, in years where you haven't had a contract, you haven't shown up to this. Like, the message you send is by showing up this time, by saying, hey, I'm here, I'm active, let's get this done. Because even when you haven't had a deal that you're negotiating, you usually don't show up to it.
Looks really good for Schottenheimer, too.
Yeah, because Schottenheimer had talked about it at the league meeting.
Attendance.
It was very, Mike McCarthy was very upset when Micah Parsons didn't show up to some of this stuff last year and could barely conceal how frustrated he was. It felt like a very intentional thing when Brian Schottenheimer was at those meetings a couple weeks ago and said, he told me he's going to be there, so I think he's going to be there.
Yep.
And now Mike is showing up. It's like, okay, either he was being straight up with Shoddy, or Shoddy ended up putting a little bit of pressure on, he told me it, so I'm going to publicly say he told me it.
Jordan Schultz, NFL insider on FS1, talking about this Micah deal still not getting done and how Jerry is still stuck in the 90s.
The Cowboys start their offseason work today, and edge Micah Parsons still hasn't been extended. Dak Prescott was asked about Micah's contract and joked with the media, saying that he doesn't have the full answer why Cowboys negotiations take so long, adding that all of his contracts would have been done a lot sooner if he did. Now, Colin, I thought Jerry had a very telling quote at the recent owners' meetings. He said, quote, I don't know why, I just can't deal with a player. Also, basically said he doesn't know who David Mulugeta is, Parsons' agent. This is why, Colin, the Cowboys have not been relevant since the 1990s. This is not Emmitt Smith. You don't talk and deal with the player like you did three decades ago.
Right.
The agent has been empowered in a way that is significantly different than the 1990s with Aikman and Emmitt and Irvin. And as a result of that, in my opinion, Jerry's still thinking archaically that the right way to handle a Micah Parsons extension is basically to get Micah to acquiesce one-on-one. That's exactly the problem that we're dealing with.
Look, some of the best Jerry stories are El Paso.
Yeah.
I'm going to El Paso on your deal. Like, this is, have you heard of that town in West Texas?
The T.O. Napkin.
The Napkin. You know, there's, if you ever run into Michael Irvin, ask him to tell the Jerry contract story. It's an epic story, and there's language you can't use on the radio. But
what's your point?
That's where he's at his best at. He can schmooze a player. He can cater to the player's emotions. You can't do that when you're dealing with an agent who's just looking at a spreadsheet.
But is it productive?
Is it productive to,
for the negotiation to get completed and done? Jordan Schultz is arguing it's archaic.
It is the way Jerry wants to do it.
Yeah.
It is archaic because the players don't let you do that necessarily anymore. You know, he may want to do it, but at the end of the day, you know, he tries it that way. It doesn't work. And then you roll out to training camp and you sign CeeDee Lamb and you sign Zach Martin, you sign Dak Prescott on the Sunday before the season.
I mean, he's had success getting it done even in the last decade.
Well,
But I mean, he does get stuff done. Sitting, like, he got Zach Martin done by, all right, I'm sitting down, I'm getting involved. I'm sitting down, I'm getting involved has pushed it over the edge before. There have been a few exceptions to that where it just has not happened. Dez told him no. He tried to get up to Dez. Dez told him straight out, he's like, I play football. I don't negotiate things. You talk to my agent. He's like, I know better than to sit across from you at this table and do this. Dak never got involved, refused to do it. And now Micah started to and then had to pull back.
A developing situation right now in the National Football League.
Yep. Speaking of David Mulugeta clients, Ian Rappaport says the Dolphins and seven-time Pro Bowl cornerback Jalen Ramsey are mutually set to explore trade options. And it wouldn't be a surprise if he played elsewhere in 2025. Miami and Ramsey do $25.1 million fully guaranteed this season. Could be parting ways. He followed up and said, while there's no firm deadline on a possible trade, with the NFL draft 9 days away, completing a trade prior to the draft would make sense, if only so Miami can use the pick or picks they would acquire for Ramsey. So Ian Rappaport saying that there's a decent shot that sometime in the next 9 days, Jalen Ramsey gets dealt.
Okay. That immediately makes me think of Tyreek. Like, would Miami be willing to go ahead and punt on this current crop? I can't keep track of Jalen Ramsey extensions. Like, I'm like, didn't he just get paid? What is he unhappy about? What's going on there?
Jalen Ramsey
is no longer straight shutdown. 77 Pro Football Focus grade, for whatever that is worth, last year.
For a 30-year-old, that's not, I don't think that's terrible from a corner.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, the problem is, I mean, you're going to run into is that, you know, this is that kind of that age where you wonder what he has left.
My mind immediately shuts off and cancels any Jalen Ramsey discussion around here, Bobby.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that he'd be an option here, especially because of the amount of money and his age, because he is, I mean, he'll be 31 in October, but I mean, that's still, he was young when he got into the league. He was 20 his rookie year, so I mean, this is going to be year 10 coming up here, and he's just going to turn 31 during this year. But yeah, I'm looking at it. He has signed, it looks like, three deals, and then he had another that was reworked. So, I mean, he's made his career earnings to this point. He's made, it looks like, $130 million.
Oof.
Jalen Ramsey going to be playing for someone else other than the Miami Dolphins, according to Ian Rappaport. It happened to the Dallas Stars again. And how did the nosebleeds react to Bobby Bell? We have all the audio next on The Fan.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean. Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
You can finally rejoice, Cowboys fans. Mel Kiper has changed his pick for the Dallas Cowboys.
Mel Kiper Jr.
He had been very committed for several months to Omarion Hampton, the running back from North Carolina. I still remember when the first mock draft popped up. We were in the middle of a segment, and I just opened it up, and I looked, and I shuddered to where Sean had to stop down and go, like, what was that reaction for? He's like, listen at 840 because Mel Kiper just did something terrifying. And then he doubled down on it in his next mock. And then in his third mock last week, he put him there again. But this time he waffled a little. He said, you know what? I was a little 50-50 on this, but I'm sticking with it. Well, he has a new pick, and we're going to get to it here in just a second. There's a new mock draft out from Mel Kiper as well as Field Yates. And they do these exercises a lot where they alternate picks. So like, hey, Field Yates projects one. Well, now, Mel, who would you project in this situation? So it's not just a straight mock draft based on somebody's biases or whatever.
And did Mel text in this pick, RJ Choppy?
No, he did not text in this pick. That's for dang sure. Because he does not have a cell phone.
Why not?
That's just what he says. He doesn't have a cell phone. He says if you need him that badly, you can call his wife. And
wow.
This is, I worked with a guy, Kevin Kiley. He was the host of the Michael Irvin show, right? Kevin Kiley, man. He didn't have a cell phone either, and he didn't have an email address. If you wanted to get in touch with him, he gave you his house. He gave you his house phone where his wife lived in Virginia. And then she would call him at the hotel or a place that he would stay. He didn't want anybody to have his phone number. So she would get a hold of him that way.
So they lived in separate states?
Because he was here working. She didn't want to leave.
I have a number for Kiper.
Do you? Oh.
He must be his home phone. He has like four landlines. According to this SI article, he has like four landlines.
Why would you have four landlines?
So he can cut. So
you got a fax?
Like, here's one I do for interviews. Here's one I do to talk to people. Yeah. This is one, I guess, just like that.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know.
So there is a cell phone, but his wife manages it. He's been on this group chat with like Field Yates and Todd McShay and all these guys, right? And in a year and a half, they've been on this group chat. Mel's responded one time. That was a thumbs up emoji in a year and a half. And they text like dozens of times every day.
Yeah.
But he doesn't use a cell phone. He goes, throughout the day, I don't want a cell phone or a call anywhere near me. I want to be able to get my work done. Now, I don't know how he's getting his work done without the cell phone. I'm sure he's making calls. That's what the four landlines are.
I mean,
for.
That's all the work he does if you read his scouting reports these days. So,
what?
Just calling other people.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It's,
then
it's,
why are we talking about his mock on the radio?
Because I think calling people and finding out who they think the Cowboys will go to, I think, is more valuable than just his scouting report. All right. So, we're going to go through this mock draft. It starts with Field Yates. So, he picks the odd numbers, and then Mel Kiper picks the even numbers. The Cowboys, this is a three-round mock. All of the Cowboys' picks are even numbers. So Mel Kiper is making all of these selections. First overall pick in this one, Cam Ward to the Titans. Mel Kiper is projecting Travis Hunter to the Browns. That's become a pretty popular projection at this point. And Travis Hunter would play receiver in all likelihood for Cleveland.
Oh.
Third pick, the Giants. Could they go Shedeur Sanders? No. Field Yates projects Abdul Carter. This is starting to settle in. That's kind of becoming a popular top three. There was
Working out for the Giants today.
There was a lot of different discussion around the top three for several months. The last week, it feels like this is what people are calling now. Four, Will Campbell to the Patriots. Five, Mason Graham, the defensive tackle from Michigan to the Jaguars. Six, Ashton Jeanty, Boise State running back to the Raiders. That's feels like the one that's been locked in the longest now for about a month and a half. The Jets at seven take Armand Membu, offensive tackle from Missouri. Jalen Walker, the tweener linebacker, edge rusher from Georgia, goes to the Panthers. Number nine, Kellen Moore rescues Shedeur Sanders, quarterback, Colorado. And that's Field Yates' projection. Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State, goes to the Bears. And then the 49ers take Kelvin Banks, offensive tackle, Texas. Which, by the way, the 49ers are the biggest wild card ahead of Dallas to where they could take almost anything. And they could also be in the market to trade out and could have somebody jump in front of you and steal somebody if you want. So San Francisco's kind of a terrifying
they
one.
They feel like receiver there, too.
Yes. I mean, they could. They could do anything there, honestly, other than I would think quarterback. I think they are pretty committed to Purdy at this point. But pick 12 for the Cowboys. Mel Kiper's been projecting Omarion Hampton. His new selection is a wide receiver. It is not Tetaroa McMillan. It is Texas wide receiver Matthew Golden. He said, I thought about North Carolina running back Omarion Hampton, but the possibility of Golden's speed and great route running opposite CeeDee Lamb, as you can see some of the route running on the fan cam right now, just make too much sense. The Cowboys finally get some reliability at wide receiver two for quarterback Dak Prescott. They haven't had two wide receivers over 700 yards since Lamb and Amari Cooper both did it in 2021. And he's really talented. The spatial awareness, the ball tracking, the stop-start ability, he's got a really high ceiling as a route runner. The only problem is just it's not refined yet. And there are times where if he's not first in the progression, you kind of wonder, all right, how locked in is he right now? But, I mean, he had a massive game in that Arizona State game, caught the game-winning touchdown to send Cam Scatabum home crying to his ASU sorority girls. But I think
what a bad way to be going home crying.
But refinement to me, you didn't just describe refinement. You described focus to me if he's not involved first in the route.
So refinement is the bigger issue to me. There are a couple times where you just see, like, is he totally focused, though? I think you see both. The lack of refinement is thing, but all the traits are there to be really, really impressive.
I mean, you can see it.
Yeah,
he's shifty. He's explosive. Look at that.
And like, I mean,
that's good. You can put people on skates with that.
Yeah, and he's somebody who he'll attack the football. He's got good hands. I really, really like him. I wouldn't hate the pick. I do think McMillan's better, but Tet McMillan falls in this draft.
Who's your golden comp? You said Tet McMillan, Brandon Marshall.
So. Matthew Golden, it didn't get a chance to play out. The player he looks like on tape to me is Henry Ruggs. But Henry Ruggs obviously didn't get a chance to really finish off his career because he finished his career.
Yeah.
You go through the rest of the mock, though, and Tet McMillan, it's become this free fall. McMillan ends up going, he's actually not even if you count Travis Hunter as receiver, McMillan's not even the third receiver off the board.
That's real quick, NFL.com has Chris Olave as Golden's comp.
Which Olave's
on NFL.com.
I don't totally see Olave. Olave's a stronger route runner to me. Golden's still not there. Yeah. But I mean, if you're trying to project out and say he could become that. But when Olave was coming out, he was really, really strong as a route runner.
I'll take Chris Olave.
The Chargers at pick 22 take Emeka Egbuka before Tet McMillan even goes off the board.
UConn Center.
Wide receiver, Ohio State. Right. No. By the way, I did prove it while you were out. It is Khalid El-Amin. So it's Khalid. All right. Pick 25, the Houston Texans end up taking Tet McMillan. So
the level of petty this guy has.
You
want to
see me get in studio.
So CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud. I do want to see you get in studio. Yeah, let's go. Tet McMillan goes 25 to the Texans, so CJ Stroud ends up with the target there. A projected trade. The Browns come up and take the Commanders pick, so the Commanders trade out of the first round. And then the Eagles with the last pick of the first round take Jahad Campbell, linebacker from Alabama. And Washington takes, I hate this, trying to pronounce his name, Donovan Ezeruwake. I can't do it, but he's the edge rusher from Boston College. Giants get their quarterback with their first pick in the second round. They take Tyler Shuck, the quarterback from Louisville.
Wow.
Drop down.
What's his face? Greg Cosell's guy.
Yeah, and Shuck is a guy who a lot of different people across the league think, there are different individual scouts who think he's the second best quarterback. Pick 44, Blue Star Special. The Cowboys select Siobhan Revel, corner from East Carolina.
To three knee injuries. Is that what's got going there?
He's coming off of a torn ACL, so you don't really have any tape on him from last season. But this is like size, speed, combo, like the height, weight, speed combo. The stuff he put on tape throughout his career at East Carolina is really impressive. You just don't have anything from last year because he tore his ACL. So I do like that. He mentions here, he says, Dallas has injury concerns at corner with Trayvon Diggs and Deron Bland. Yes, Revel has his own coming off a torn ACL, but he's big and long, and he makes plays on the ball. Well, that doesn't matter if he's hurt.
Cowboys, baby.
Or he's not able to come back. So you look at this and you go, okay, you got a receiver, you got a corner. What else do the Cowboys need? What are they really missing? What's the blinking light left? Be that running back. Where's the running back going to come from? So you drop down to the third round, and it picks 76. Dallas Cowboys select Dylan Sampson.
That's right, baby.
Running back, Tennessee Volunteers.
Yes.
The Cowboys focused on other needs early, but they finally get their running back, and Sampson has good upside. Ran for almost 1,500 yards and 22 touchdowns last season. If they were to come away with this haul, I don't think it's a bad haul at all. Like, I mean, if you were to get Dylan Sampson in the third, I think that's good value. I like Sampson. I think if you were to get Revel in the second, that is potentially a first round player, but again, you're just talking about injuries pushed him down for a reason, and he wasn't a super polished player. That Brian Broaddus would love that pick. He thinks Revel is fantastic, and he would have. I think there was a time Broaddus would have talked about taking him at 12. He likes him so much.
Tell us about him, Ralph.
Look, this would be great. We don't fumble enough, so I think this would be a really good opportunity to start giving the ball up a little bit more. Cut down on Dak's interceptions.
Sure.
That's for sure, by fumbling. No, he's a good player. He had a stretch where he would cough the ball up, but I think that was something to do with his pads. They kind of fixed that up. But
does he remind you of anyone? What's his style?
He's got a little power. I don't know his height and weight. He looks like
sturdy.
He looks sturdy. Like he's MJD? Not like Derrick Henry. Like who?
MJD?
No, he's taller than him.
No, he's taller than him, but I mean he's like shorter, like he's kind of a
Mixon?
Brick. So he's 5'8", he's 2'0", he's 200 at the combine. A lot of people think he played closer like 205.
And what height?
5'8".
Oh.
So, but I mean, he's somebody who, like, he contributed in the passing game. He's somebody who, was prolific in the run game. He's a guy who people like, but again, it's the same question.
I mean, MJD was 5'7", 207.
The same question about.
He looks bigger than
my
him.
Comp was perfect.
The comp here is Brian Westbrook. That's the comp that NFL.com gives, which I don't think is a bad one.
Brian, he can catch like that?
I was about to say, Brian Westbrook is a better receiver to me, but yeah, he definitely had to show some of that given what Tennessee does.
You know, obviously, like, you know, the last you're going to throw Kamara comps because the school, but Alvin's a better receiver.
Alvin's more of a bowling ball too, bounces off guys.
And the Shador Giants workout is going to be Thursday, not today.
And then really quickly on Matthew Golden, if that is the pick, because I know we've run through scouting reports on other guys. These are some of the notes I have on Golden: body control and spatial awareness consistently stand out. He's got an alpha mentality; it shows up in his play style. He's got the requisite demeanor to be on an island against top corners. The issues are it's the inconsistencies with effort and focus, and he wins on traits right now, so there's a lack of polish as a route runner. But otherwise, everything is pretty, pretty good with Matthew Golden.
Below the belt on the home of the Cowboys, Draft 101 this Thursday in the building. The real thing next Thursday, as we're all at different Pluckers locations. I'll be in Mesquite. Luka becomes number one, and are you ready for Nico's next big move? Final hour, Tolo Tuesday, after this. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We're going to talk Dallas Cowboys Executive Vice President Stephen Jones in just a minute. In the meantime, it feels like the secretive meeting between Nico and Rick Welts and the media has concluded. I guess it wasn't really that secret since we all knew about it, except for cameras and other recording devices were not allowed. And sounds like the message of the day was defense wins championships. We will get back around to that in a little bit. In the meantime, our path to the draft continues with Dallas Cowboys Executive Vice President Stephen Jones. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good. I hope you're doing good as well. I know yesterday was the start of voluntary workouts, and fans were excited. And a lot of people focused in on Micah Parsons being there. I know you have a lot of other players on the team as well. But how much, if at all, do you factor in leadership when you're like negotiating a player's contract or something along those lines?
Well, anytime you're going to commit resources like we're talking about with Micah or Dak or a CD, everything factors in. It's football character. It's personal character. It's obviously skills and what they bring to the table, their, you know, what position do they play on the field. Obviously, the three guys I just talked about are all really important positions in the NFL in terms of edge rusher, number one receiver, and quarterback. But, you know, the full body of work goes in there, the health picture, everything. So, the leadership is certainly a big part of it.
One of the things that Dak Prescott said was in contract negotiations, you just got to stay positive. Make sure that the team knows what you want and what you believe. Do you feel at this point you understand what Micah Parsons wants and what he believes for this team going forward?
Yeah, I think we, you always have a feel for it. And certainly, whether it's a Dak, a CD, or a Micah, I mean, there's no question he wants, paid in a way that's, commensurate with what he feels like he brings. And we're trying to a little bit works, where the rub comes is we're trying to not only keep guys like Dak and CD and Micah, but we're also trying to put you know, a team around them that can be and can compete and, you know, win championships. And so, obviously, we're trying to get them to, you know, come a little our way and take into an account some of the things that are positive about playing for the Cowboys, playing, you know, in Texas and those type of things. And obviously, they're trying to maximize, you know, their value on their contract. So it's, you know, it's all well-meaning. It's just, you know, a lot of times a journey to get there.
When you say one of the benefits of playing in Texas, would that include the lack of a state income tax?
Sure. I mean, everybody knows that's the case here. The cost of living compared to, you know, some of these bigger cities in the NFL certainly comes into an account. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're looking for some credit for that. Just to, and the main reason for it is we're going to, you know, we're going to spend to the cap year in and year out. And, you know, over the course of time, you know, we're going to spend our money to try to get as many good players as we can. So, you know, that's the art of the deal.
Hey, Steven, I know a lot of the conversation this offseason and one of the pitches from your head coach, Brian Schottenheimer, was culture. And I've always been curious, who in his mind and who in your mind has the biggest impact on a culture in this locker room? Is it just the guys that are paid the most? Who has the big impact on the culture?
Well, obviously, it's always going to, you know, probably people are going to point to the quarterback position, the leader of the team. And, you know, I think we got one of the best in the business, especially, you know, when it comes to culture. I think Dak, you know, certainly epitomizes, you know, what it's like to be a leader and, you know, set great examples, set the, you know, try to do everything he can to set the culture. But certainly it can't be done alone. You got to have leaders on both sides of the ball and on your special teams phase. And, you know, ultimately you build it, you know, through the type of players you bring into your organization. And so I think those, you know, obviously that's important, certainly. And then the leadership within the organization, whether that's your head coach and your coaching staff, whether that's your ownership, all that goes into creating a culture.
Now, the other part, too, though, is next week, big draft. I know there's a lot. We're getting really amped up about that right now. Have you ever in your history seen a rookie come in and completely change a locker room and completely change a culture?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is done. I mean, usually it takes time. But, you know, just, you know, as of late, I thought, you know, Zeke was one of those guys who stepped right in and, you know, created a, you know, you know, in the running game, a physicality, which, you know, those teams that, you know, win a lot of football games can run the football. And, you know, he stepped right in from day one and, you know, really brought a physical toughness to our team. But it certainly can be done. It can be done through the offensive line. It can be done, you know, obviously, you know, we haven't done it in a while because we've had Dak here for so long. You know, but Dak was one of those guys that stepped right in and I think really set a tone when Tony got hurt and really filled in. And now, you know, to do that, you've got to be a great football player and play right away if you're going to, you know, if you're going to be able to step up. You know, it's always been said, you know, really be a leader and, you know, be somebody who people follow and you set a culture. You've got to be not only great off the field, but you've got to be a great player on the field, too.
One of the things I really enjoy talking with you about is the mechanisms of the salary cap. I feel like you usually give us really great insight. Can you walk our fans through maybe the idea of flipping some of the switches on contracts like Dak and other players if the money is maybe not going to be immediately used in terms of free agency?
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of our big contracts, you know, we have mechanisms within the contract, you know, that it's not even negotiated. We just have the right to convert, you know, salary to signing bonus, which in turn spreads out, you know, that salary over the life of the contract. And certainly that creates room. You know, to give you an example, if you've got a $10 million salary and the player's under contract for 5 years and you give him a, you know, you give him that in a bonus, 10 of the 12, let's say, then,
you know, that 10 goes to counting two, and the rest of the eight is spread over the remaining 4 years. So all those mechanisms are especially in the, you know, the big contracts. If you were to look at our salary cap today, you know, there's, you know, about seven or eight guys who have, you know, salaries that, you know, are big enough that you can do something with. Not to that degree necessarily. Those are usually the bigger ones, like Dak and, you know, CD and a player like Diggs and guys like that. But, you know, there's really only about normally, you know, seven or eight of those guys that you can do that with. The rookies are usually, you know, playing under their rookie deal, and they have much smaller deals. And then you know, have a lot of players like we did this year in free agency where we signed one-year deals with them that are, you know, kind of they're set. And but, you know, in general, those mechanisms are in place, you know, so we can do those type of things. Obviously, we've done it with Dak on a regular basis, and, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, does create a, you know, an unusual cap situation because we're still paying for part of his old contract because we spread it out over time, and we still have some of the remaining amortization left from his old contract in addition to what we're paying him currently.
And I hope you think this is a fair question. I guess one of my questions specifically for Dak is, why would you continue to do that when you said the money was still kind of left over from the last deal and the quarterback is getting older and coming off of another injury? Like, is there any concern that that's a pretty delicate balancing act right there?
It's a fair question, but obviously we have a lot of confidence that, you know, Dak's injury was, you know, one of those that was just unfortunate. We feel like Dak's healthy. You know, I think it's well documented. He's talked about it and what he's done with his body and, you know, how he's getting his body ready to play for this year. But, you know, we feel like Dak's going to be a healthy player for us for the life of his contract, which actually the actual contract, you know, is starting this year. And we feel like it's a, you know, he's going to be a healthy, productive quarterback in this league for us that will play, you know, at the very top of his game and give us a chance to win championships.
Steven, when you have a receiver like CeeDee Lamb, who's so capable of lining up inside, outside, and so versatile as a receiver, when you want somebody opposite him, how much does size matter in that conversation where you have a guy like Tet, who's a very tall receiver, and then you got a guy like Matthew Golden, who's shorter but runs fantastic routes and all of that?
Yeah, I think they come in all, you know, pardon the phrase here, but all shapes and sizes. I mean, some of them are smaller and really fast and can be very productive. And then you got some that their productivity comes from their length and contested catches and great hands and, you know, great ways to use their body. I mean, they do come in all forms in terms of, you know, how they can be productive. And certainly there's guys in the draft that, you know, fit both molds. And but if they do one of them, you know, at an elite level, then certainly they have a chance to make a huge difference.
Is this specific NFL draft looking different at all in terms of value? It seems to be, there seems to be some thought out there that like players 10 through 40 are kind of interchangeable, or players 40 through 80 might be kind of interchangeable. Have you found that to be?
I mean, I think there is some depth in this draft. And I think, you know, if you were going to say maybe it's not real top heavy in terms of, you know, the top of the draft being inordinately strong. I think there's some really good football players, don't get me wrong, but I do think this draft, you know, you can get really good football players, you know, through the first half or, you know, even into the second half of the draft. So, you know, we feel real good about where we're sitting and think we can get a really good football player or you know, given the opportunity to, I don't see us moving up, but
all right. Well, I think.
You still got you, Steven?
Hello?
Yes, we got you. Yeah. You said you don't necessarily see yourselves moving up, and then we lost you there.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see us moving up based on the way the board's coming together, but, you know, could see a situation where we'd move down, but we're also, you know, you always look at that pick. We've had some, you know, good things happen to us, you know, just outside of the top 10 with guys like Andre Ware and Micah Parsons and Zach Martin, Hall of Fame type players that are, you know, that fall to you and you just pick them. And that very well could be the case in this draft.
I've always been kind of curious. You know, we get to watch the war room, Stephen, and we get to see you on the phones going back and forth and all those things. In the conversations of trading draft picks, is the value, especially right now, outlandish when it comes to these things? These draft picks are more valuable now than ever before.
Yeah, you know, I think it's consistently. I don't think it's necessarily, you know, going through the roof in terms of the value of picks. I think, you know, picks are valuable. I do think, you know, if anything, I would say, you know, you can get some value in veteran-type players that teams have decided they need to move on for cap reasons. You know, there's some value out there. Of course, we've made, you know, some trades here in the offseason that we felt really brought, you know, some players to us that can really be of value to us next year. I feel like we've, you know, done a really good job of really solidifying our team in terms of depth, in terms of being able to draft here in the draft. I think we got a lot done this offseason, and like I said, it's not over yet. We'll continue to look at opportunities to help this football team.
I saw Ashton Genty was on with my friend Kay Adams, and he said Jerry was holding up a championship belt and admiring it when he walked in. Is that an inspirational move on Jerry's part, like larger than life at all times? Is that on him?
Oh, he likes to have fun with these young men, and I know he does that. He's got that trophy that's in there that was a gift to him from one of the events we had out at the stadium. You know, another one I really like that he does is lately he's gotten to where they get their mother on the phone. And, you know, as we all love and, you know, one of the most important things in most men's life is their mother. And certainly these guys are no different. And, you know, they really enjoy, they smile ear to ear when they get their mother on the phone with Jerry. And a lot of times I'm sitting in there, a lot of times Jerry and I'll interview a player together. And it's been real fun watching these guys react to their mother and how they interact with Jerry and myself. And that's been entertaining. And you can see a lot about a young man in terms of, you know, what they think of their mother. And you can tell these guys are certainly defer to their mother.
Do you think maybe there should be consideration not for Hard Knocks, but for Jerry Interviews Players' Moms as the next NFL show? Because I would watch that.
It's actually, I know one thing, it's been very entertaining for me. So it might just be something that would be for these guys to catch on camera. And, you know, I think it's very, you know, it's very genuine. It's very organic, and you can tell the players really like it and enjoy it. I mean, they're smiling ear to ear, and certainly usually the mother's just having a ball with it as well. And you can tell the mothers rule the roost with these young men.
For sure.
Well, we appreciate the time very much, good sir. We'll catch up with you after night one of the draft next week. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Great being on. Have a good week.
Yes, sir.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through the Fan, 877-881-1053. Frankel, injury attorney, text line if you want to get involved in the conversation or on the Twitch or on the YouTube. Who is the single best NFL draft pick in Cowboys history? Because I think that answer is easy.
Really?
But then I think it gets more complicated as we go round by round.
Okay, so the best in the history, and that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be even the number one overall pick.
Correct. In fact, I would argue it should not be the number one pick.
That being DeBerg.
Now, Steve DeBerg was phenomenal, just not for the Cowboys, and that's unfortunate. But maybe one of the greatest Cowboys quarterback draft picks ever is what I'll say. There have been a lot of really good Cowboys quarterback draft picks, two at least.
It's true.
I'll say the best draft pick ever.
Because we did the worst stuff yesterday, so it feels like we got to do the best.
Has to be the quarterback that led them to not one, but three Super Bowls in his career, and that is Troy Aikman.
No.
That's what I said.
I mean, that's your opinion. This is why I think your opinion is wrong. The correct answer, because you got to factor in value as well.
Well, oh, you didn't say that we were valuing picking here.
Troy Aikman, okay, you made a great pick at number one overall.
Exactly.
Good for you.
Not everybody wanted him, but Gil did.
Yeah. Well, good job.
Gil got him.
You picked the best player with the best pick. Great work. Man,
that was a really good
draft,
though.
Maybe not the best player, because that top five is un-freaking believable, except for one of them. No, the best draft pick in Cowboys history. I take you to the 10th round in 1964, when you drafted Captain America himself, Roger Staubach. All right. Roger Staubach won two Super Bowls for the Cowboys. And I know you're going to say that Aikman won three, and three is more than two.
Three is more than two. I get you. He should have won four in a row.
But we got Staubach.
If it wasn't for a damn pass interference, I know, it wasn't called.
I know. Sorry. But we got Staubach in the 10th round.
Okay.
That is again, the greatest value you're going
to
get.
And then the next year he started for you, right?
No. He didn't come to the team for like 4 or 5 years.
What?
Because you know what? Because he's a damn patriot. And he's like, I'm going to serve my commitment to the military after he won a Heisman Trophy. And that's the only reason he doesn't have four Super Bowls.
I am fascinated by the idea of if Roger Staubach did that now.
Oh, my God.
Would people lose their minds?
I think they would.
That they took the 110th overall pick in the 10th round or whatever it was, and he's not showing up and you were relying on him as quarterback. Would people be upset, or would they be like, no, we're willing to wait this out because we saw what happened? You're right, Kevin. And I don't know exactly how people felt then. I don't know what my dad and his dad were feeling at that time when they were like, why the hell did we waste a pick on this guy? Or if they were just like,
that John Meredith and then Craig Morton.
Yeah. So I'm interested in that, but he did set the standard for the organization.
Yes.
Like the entire, him and Tom Landry are united together in that front, right? And
yes,
they were the standard for excellence in Cowboys. And then the Cowboys got Troy Aikman, and that became the next standard for excellence, in my opinion.
I am really curious if you're going to go Troy Aikman once we get back to round one. All right, so now I want to go round by round. The greatest Dallas Cowboys draft pick in each round. We're only going 7 rounds. I know that the draft used to be significantly longer, and in the AFL, they're just like, pick until you're tired of saying names.
Didn't John Madden get selected in like the 27th round?
Yeah, like they were whatever. So we're going to stick with the more modern draft formula of 7 rounds. Who is the greatest 7th round pick for the Cowboys of all time? Here are your options.
All right.
Unless you want to just pick somebody totally different. Rock Marion.
Ooh, that's good.
Jay Ratliff.
That's really good.
Leon Lett.
Oh.
Bullet Bob Hayes.
Dang.
And Ray Field Wright.
Okay.
Cowboys are beasted drafting in the 7th round.
They were. I mean, who've they gotten lately?
Hey,
Colston Weatherington.
That is
John Nick.
This is a fair point.
Courtney Brown.
Jay Ratliff wasn't.
Yes.
I mean, that was a long time ago.
Mike Mickens. Jay Ratliff, it's amazing how many people love Jay Ratliff because, again, he was a 7th round pick and he wasn't supposed to be anything and he turned into a very good player. This is tough because Rayfield Wright's a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Bullet Bob Hayes was amazing.
Yep.
And then I love Leon Lett personally because he popped the bubble wrap that I gave him right there in my face. And he did it faster than anybody I've ever seen pop bubble wrap. That was amazing.
For me, it comes down to Wright or Hayes,
yeah,
but I hear you.
I'm right there with you too. And I didn't see enough Rayfield Wright highlights in my career. So I will go with Bullet Bob Hayes.
I'm going to go with Rayfield Wright just because I feel like he had to struggle more to ultimately get some of that recognition.
I gotcha.
That I thought he was due all along.
Do not sleep on Brock Marion. Like, go back and watch how important he was to that team. He was really important.
Round number six, your candidates. Jim Cooper, who I definitely know who that is. Eugene Lockhart. And D.D. Lewis.
Eugene Lockhart. I'll take that one all day.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
I had dinner with him at Camp Easy's.
But if you're a Doomsday defense fan,
Dorsett,
I can see how you might go D.D. Lewis. All right, round number five. I think this one is going to be easy. Orlando Scandrick, Ron Springs, Blaine Nye, the science guy, Walt Garrison, or Herschel Walker?
I guess
it's got to be Herschel,
Walt
right?
Garrison. Because of what you got,
I mean, Walt Garrison. Everybody loved Walt Garrison.
I'm going to go with Walt Garrison, even though I know like Herschel Walker was a blast. He was in our era. He didn't. Can you say that he didn't quite live up to what Herschel Walker was supposed to be?
Yes.
But he did get us the king's ransom that everybody expected we should get for Luka.
Yes, he did.
Sorry, I didn't bring up Luka.
Okay. And by the way, and I see for everybody who is voting for Bullet Bob Hayes, I totally get it. I think more people recognized his impact that immediately than maybe they did Rayfield Wright. And so I'm a sucker for Rayfield Wright because I don't feel like he got his proper.
Didn't get his credit.
Yeah, exactly.
It even took a long time for him to get into the hall.
Yes, it did.
Thank you very much, Rick Goslin.
He tried.
No,
yeah.
Rick Goslin,
you were saying he kept him out.
Yeah,
okay.
For most people that got into the hall from the Cowboys, Rick Goslin was the pitch.
Round four. Competition stepping up. Tony Tolbert, Brady James, Marion Barber, Tom Rafferty.
Man, Mike loved Tom Rafferty.
He does.
I will go with Tony Tolbert because he was a champion. And I know that team, they'll point to Charles Haley and they'll point to all these guys. But ask Nate Newton. Ask ask Charles Haley. How important Tony Tolbert was on the other side. I'm a huge Tony Tolbert fan. He was that's where it is. He wasn't a star, but he was a dude you had to have on your team to win those championships. You had to have a guy like him.
Tony Tolbert was my vote as well. Now, as you can guess, these top three rounds get crazy. So who was the greatest third round pick in Cowboys history? Here are some of your options.
Steven Peterman.
If you want. Charlie Waters. Eric Williams, Harvey Martin, and Jason Witten.
This is tough.
That is a stacked group.
Because we know and we love Jason Witten.
Yes.
Harvey Martin has never gotten the due he deserves.
Harvey Martin is very much in my Rayfield Wright category, and that's why I think I would give him the edge. But I understand.
Eric Williams was a nasty monster on the field. Absolute nasty monster. And Charlie Waters might be the most beloved Cowboy. He might be right up there as one of the most beloved Cowboys ever.
I could see that.
I'll just say because I watched Jason Witten. You know what? No, Eric Williams won a Super Bowl too. I'll go with Eric Williams. Okay. I didn't watch Charlie Waters. I never saw Harvey Martin. I have so much respect for what I hear about Harvey Martin from guys like my dad, anybody that was in that era. But Eric Williams, I'll stick with him. I love Jason Witten, but that team just never got over the top. And that's where, you know, it stunk to hear Jerry yesterday saying, hey, it's a travesty that we didn't get you, Tyron, a championship. And you're just sitting there going, look at all these dudes you've said that to now. Dadgummit, come on.
All right, I'm going to have to eat a little crow real quick. I will admit, I researched off of some older sources. Would you put Dak Prescott as your best ever fourth round pick, right? I see people sending in. That's fair. I apologize.
Dak, I mean, I might still stick with some of the other guys.
Okay.
Like that, if you're going value wise, yeah.
Yeah.
Like it does seem like, but you've paid a lot for him.
Man, you have. All right. Round number two. And again, feel free to send in your own candidates. This is going to be tough. Mel Renfro. Darren Woodson.
Too, yeah. Okay. There you go.
And Larry Allen.
Crap. I hate you.
I didn't make this list, but those incredible names. It feels like it should be Darren Woodson most of the time, but there's no way I'm not picking Larry Allen.
Fine. I know. And you know what? The one thing you probably have that you don't ever want to say to Darren Woodson, because we love him so much, is Larry's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but I would never have wanted to say that to Larry Allen because he right ripped my face off like he did that guy's face mask.
You don't want to say it to Woody either because we love him. So
he's the best.
Larry Allen's in the Hall of Fame. I will go with him. I love Darren Woodson. I think that he would point to Lariano and go, dude, he's maybe the greatest guard to ever step on the field.
Yeah.
So by all means, I appreciate that. I think that Darren would have that kind of consideration for his teammate.
Now, as you can probably guess, the toughest of them all. Alec, if you want to vote in on this one, I will give you some candidates. The greatest first round pick in Cowboys history. Is it Zach Martin, Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, Tony Dorsett, Randy White, Bob Lilly, Emmitt Smith? Like, that is a murderer's row of I don't think you can really go wrong. It shows you that I didn't even put Tyron Smith in the top eight. And obviously, he has had a hell of a career.
Alec, this is you now, because I don't want to choose. I don't want anybody to hate me.
I don't feel like there's a wrong answer, but if you got to pick one, don't you think it has to be the guy that holds the NFL rushing record? Don't you think? Like,
Three-time Super Bowl champion.
If we're going to go X's and O's here, I'm going to go with the greatest to ever play the position for my money. It's going to be Emmitt Smith. It's so tough because who knows? At the end of his career, there could be an argument for Micah Parsons. There could be an argument for any of the guys that you just listed.
Yeah, CeeDee Lamb could get it at some point.
CeeDee Lamb, absolutely. He could break all the records. He could set some NFL records in his career. We don't know. But, man, I think it has to be Emmitt.
You know my love and an adoration for number two overall pick, Tony Dorsett.
Yes.
And I just told you, I think Troy Aikman might be the best Cowboy ever. I also will agree with Alec on this, though. Emmitt Smith was the reason Troy Aikman's numbers aren't better. Emmitt Smith was so good, and that offensive line was so good, he knew, we can run the ball. I don't have to do this.
Yeah.
And so they deferred to him for pretty much everything. And he has some legendary games, like some extremely legendary games where they wouldn't have done it if they didn't have that guy.
Do you think I picked Emmitt Smith?
I think you picked Bob Lilly.
Good call. Emmitt Smith, obviously a fine choice, among the greatest players of all time. I still think Bob Lilly is right there with Aaron Donald in terms of the best defensive tackle ever. And one of the best defensive players in the history of the NFL. He made the all-decade team twice in the 60s and the 70s. He was first-team all-pro seven times. I think he is one of, and plus, he autographed something specifically for Peace-a-thon in multiple years.
Yes, he has. He's been awesome.
I'm a sucker for Bob Lilly as well. I understand any number of these answers. I'm going with Bob Lilly on this. Though I think Zach Martin could be in that conversation as well.
Hey, Kevin, I'm going to go back and change mine to Roger Staubach again.
Okay.
Our first ever guest on the KNC Masterpiece. He essentially got us a radio show. It's Roger Staubach.
There you go. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next.
Our boss said, how the hell did you get Roger Staubach? Who are you guys? And we were like, we got friends.
And then it was all downhill from there.
Since then.
All right, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Cowboys defensive lineman Solomon Thomas set to join us here in just a second. The segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck, wreck, call the Frankels first. 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Franklin Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. It's also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today. CarsForKids.org. Yeah, at a Coppell High School, Stanford. Third overall pick, the 2017 draft, signing on with the Cowboys here just a month ago. Solomon Thomas joining us now on your home of the Cowboys. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing wonderful, thank you. Well, congrats on coming to play for the hometown team, man. That's got to be exciting for you and your family.
It's so exciting, you know, just growing up in Coppell and then having a career where I haven't played in Dallas since high school and coming back in my ninth year at NFL is it's like a dream come true. So, you know, happy to come home, happy to be a Cowboy. It's all been amazing.
Now, being the new guy, being a veteran, how do you look at leadership coming into a situation like this? Are you that guy?
Definitely. You know, you can be a leader and not say much. That's a misconception in sports and in life. Sometimes people think leaders are the loudest ones. As a new guy, I always like to come in and prove myself. I want to come in, do things the right way, show the young guys how to work, you know, how I take myself seriously, how I take this job seriously, and then just go from there. You know, lead by example first, then, you know, when I start knowing everyone, understanding the team, understanding the dynamic, then I can, you know, speak a little bit more. But always come in, you know, leading by example first and earning your stripes, no matter how long you've been in the league.
Well, we're pumped to have you. You also get to come into the Cowboys with your former defensive line coach, Aaron Whitecotton, both of you coming over from the Jets. What can you tell us about him and how he's helped you really have some of the best seasons of your career?
Yeah, no, Coach Whitecotton's been amazing to me. You know, I'm so thankful for him, his family. I'm thankful for the way he's believed in me and he's pushed me. He's definitely gotten the best out of me. But, you know, Coach Whitecotton, you know, he's extremely passionate. You know, he loves his game and he loves his D linemen. And he's gonna ride for them no matter what. So, you know, one thing he's gonna do, he's gonna get the best out of every single player on the D line. You know, he's gonna make us play with effort, violence, passion, and he's gonna make us show it every day. And that's one thing about him. He gets the best out of his players, but he's also good at having us understand what we're getting, like what block schemes we're getting, what the team's tendencies are. He's just an overall great coach mentally and physically, and the guys we're very lucky to have him.
How's he do it? Is he a loud guy, or does he get quiet and give you an inspiring message? How's he go about it?
I would say in the meeting room he's more relaxed. Like, he's just a coach, and sometimes, you know, he's a coach who can relate to players. You know, he's a little younger. He's, you know, under 40, but he's also like can relate to the guys. He's very loud. He's the loudest coach out there, probably screaming the most. And you know, sometimes the players might not like it, but at the end of the day, we understand that it's out of love, and you know that after every single game, every single season, guys love him. You know, no matter how much he yells, we love him because he cares about us and he wants us to be our best.
Hey Solomon, I really did enjoy watching your tape when the Jets, and I've said this on our station a couple different times. I thought you were one of the best signings that they've absolutely had here in a while because of the way that you play, though. And you mentioned Coach Whitecotton. What did he really unlock from you? It's your pass rush stuff has always been really, really good, but the run stuff, the way that you play run defense, it seemed like you just on film take a lot of pride in the way you play that way.
Definitely. You know, I catch a lot of criticism being an undersized guy without guys even watching my film. You know, scouts around the league will just go ahead and say that I can't play the run because of my size. And yeah, I feel like I've proven that over the last 3 years, especially playing primarily inside at my size and playing a lot of double teams and beating a lot of double teams. But Coach Whitecotton, just the way he takes his drills into practice in the games. It's everyday repetition. It's nonstop details. He's never going to let off. He doesn't have favorites. He coaches everyone the same. But the biggest thing for me that he instilled in me, he believed in me. I hadn't always had that in my career.
Sure.
It started with Kucerich and San Fran my last year. I only had 1 year with him. Then was very extremely lucky to play with Marinelli. But then when I got to Whitecotton, just flourished. That belief, that love, that passion he showed me, just had me go know that I can go play football and I belong here. And he really got that out of me.
Talking with Cowboys defensive tackle Solomon Thomas here in the G-Bag Nation. What are the early returns on new head coach Brian Schottenheimer?
Man, I'm loving Coach Shotty right now. You know, he's from the Pete Carroll tree, and, you know, he loves his players and his players love him. Really, really buying into that team bonding right now. He wants the guys to love each other. He wants the guys to play for each other. Because, you know, if you want to win a Super Bowl, which is our goal, it's everyone's goal in that building, you have to love the guys in the room. You have to be able to understand them and fight for them on the good days and the bad. You don't get through losses without having the right guys in the building or the guys having your back. You don't make it into the playoffs playing a long season, 17 games, plus 4 or 5 weeks of camp, plus three preseason games without having guys have your back and understand that culture. So he's getting the culture right, but he's also his theme right now is compete every day, and that's what we're doing. We're getting better. We're working hard. We're understanding each other and loving each other.
Hey, Solomon, is there any pressure coming back home and playing for a team that, you know, in a city where you grew up?
You know, I definitely would have said so earlier in my career, but now going into year 9, knowing how it goes, knowing how to handle myself, understanding the game more mentally than physically at this point in my career, I don't feel the pressure. You know, it's a joy to be home. It's a joy to be in the city. You know, I've seen Cowboys fans and their reaction to the last, you know, 9, 15 years of my life, and I'm excited to make them good ones this year, and it's going to be fun.
It's Solomon Thomas here, obviously Cowboys defensive lineman, also co-founder of The Defensive Line, a nonprofit that champions student-athlete mental health, just partnered with the Jed Foundation, which is a national nonprofit protecting emotional health and preventing suicide for teens and young adults. So congrats on that partnership, Solomon. How long has mental health been a focus for you?
You know, it's been a focus of mine for about 7-8 years now. Unfortunately, I lost my sister to suicide in 2018, and I didn't know much about mental health before that. You know, I was a football player. I was in the locker room where you don't talk about emotions. You don't talk about these things. You know, mental health is a feeling you can get over. That was my mentality, but after I lost my sister, I went through my own mental health battle, and, you know, I learned that mental health is real. You know, it's a disease just like any other disease. You know, it's where your brain's not getting the right chemical imbalance. You know, whether you're not blocking enough cortisol or getting enough serotonin, it is real. And I learned the power in therapy, the power in crying, the power in owning your emotions, and just understanding yourself and always learning and being curious about who you are and loving yourself, understanding it's okay not to be okay. So from that, the last 8 years, I've gone around talking about my story, my sister's story, talking about how, like, I'm in this gladiator sport, and my life may look perfect, but it's not. And, you know, that's okay. And if someone can see me, a professional athlete, can struggle, hopefully they know that it's okay to struggle too, that they can get through whatever they're getting through, and that there's a light on the other side of the dark storm that they're going through.
How much stress and mental health adversity do you think the average NFL player is dealing with, or how prevalent is that around the league?
You know, I don't think there's a player that doesn't experience it. You know, we're very blessed. You know, we make a lot of money. We play in a dream that we've always dreamed of playing in, and I'm not taking that away. But the stress of this league, the performance you're under all the time, the public scrutiny, not knowing if people love you for the right reasons, if people want to be with you for the right reasons nonstop, that is a mental health grind on its own, and it's never ending while you're in this league, while you have that label. So I think guys go through it all the time. And then also on top of that, you can get cut, traded, your career could be snapping fingers, and you don't know what's next. Because in this game, if you don't put everything in the game of football, you won't be in the NFL. So that's the mental stress of it. So I think all the guys go through it, but it's about letting the guys know it's okay to go through it, and it's okay to get help, and it's okay to feel these things, and it's okay to talk about them. Because we're vulnerable and we talk about them, then we all can kind of go through experience that, hey, like, oh, you're going through that, I'm going through it too. And then we feel more human, and then that weight is lifted off our shoulders. But I think every NFL player goes through mental health at some point. It's just about knowing that they have the right support system and that it's okay for them to go through it.
How many pounds of crawfish did you put down the other day?
I was eating with my boy, Tenzel. I played with him with the Jets. He's now a coach in the D-line. And, you know, he's from New Orleans, but he's from Baton Rouge. But I was trying to impress him. So I think he put down around close to 2 pounds. I put down like 1.5.
So you talked
that's
about
light work.
That is. I was expecting a little bit more. But when it comes to, you know, playing for one another, who have you been bonded with so far along the defense?
You know, definitely some guys in the line right now, like Osa, you know, Sam Williams, you know, Peyton Turner. I could really name all the guys right now, but it's been fun to just play with them. Just get to see how they work, their leadership, their styles, how they mess with each other in the locker room. You know, that kind of stuff has been fun. So, you know, we have a good D-line already, and I'm excited about it because we're just going to grow, and it's going to be great.
Solomon, is there any action steps regarding the defensive line of the Jed Foundation to pass along to the audience before we let you go?
Just if you go check us out at thedefensiveline.org. We are doing so much good work. My parents have altered their lives to make this their life mission, to make sure that no one else dies by suicide or no one else feels the pain that my family feels. So I would say, you know, go to thedefensiveline.org, check us out on Instagram, on at thedefensiveline, and just show your support. You know, we're doing great work. We're a small, young nonprofit. We have, you know, I think we have 6 employees max. And, you know, we're doing our best to change the world. So we would love any support, any donations, a follow, a retweet, a like. It all means so much to a small nonprofit. And I'm very thankful for the Jed Foundation for their partnership and their work. You know, they're an unbelievable nonprofit that has shown the way. So that would be great.
Well, God bless you and your family, man. Thanks for sharing. Great to get to know you more. And we'll see you in Oxnard, sir.
Sounds great. Thank you guys so much.
Salute. There he goes. Solomon Thomas here with you, the G-Back Nation, 105.3 The Fan.
Going to catch up with our buddy David Hellman, Fox Sports, here as we get into hour number three of the G-Bag Nation. Wolchuk, Chiafalo, Broadus, rolling with you. We got Lucius Alexander holding it down to the Pimp Cup. Carter Freeman running your video as well as we are closer and closer to the NFL Draft. We've got Path to the Draft, which will be on Thursday right here, Draft 101, and your Path to the Draft brought to you by Pluckers. We absolutely love you, Pluckers. We'll have our draft party. You got fan hosts set up at every single Pluckers location. Of course, we'll have the best draft coverage for you on 105.3 The Fan as well. And tomorrow, we'll be at Shell Shack. You can come check out the G-Bag Nation live because Thursday it's National Crawfish Day. So we will be at Shell Shack right off Henderson here in Dallas tomorrow for the full show. Rangers lineup here, though, on your home of the Rangers, 105.3 The Fan. It is Tyler Mahle, the righty, who is looking to stay unbeaten on the season. He's going to get the start today. Marcus Semien will still be leading off. You'll have Corey Seager and Josh Young batting 2 and 3. Adolis Garcia, Kevin Pillar getting the start in left field. Jonah Heim will be DHing. Kyle Higashioka, Ezekiel Duran, and then Leody Taveras will be rounding out your lineup for your Texas Rangers. So no Jake Berger, no Jock Peterson, and Josh Smith, I'm assuming, just getting the night off, as it is Yusei Kikuchi, the lefty. And the Rangers, you know, that was one of the big things last year, struggling against left-handed pitching. How were they able to do tonight? As, you know, it's a battle of 1-2 in that AL West. 9-6 Angels, 9-7 Rangers, roof is open. Let's go ahead and get victory number one so we can collect a sweep, get the broomsticks out.
Yeah, we gotta get the vibes back here after you get swept by a divisional opponent. It's nice that you have another one on deck at home and hopefully go ahead and right the wrongs of the weekend. But yeah, when you have a lefty on the bump, I guess that makes sense why a guy like Jock Peterson's not going to be in the lineup here. They're still looking to get him going. But Tyler Mahle, that's encouraging. If he goes another 7 innings, come on now.
Boy, he was good in Chicago.
Very impressive.
Wow. Oh, he was fantastic.
Really good.
Yeah, I mean, after the first start, he's really been dialed in. Mm. He's been really, really good. So looking forward to catch up with Jared Sandler coming up at 4:40. We will go around the bases at 6. We got the top 10 coming up on the other side, but always tons of draft content to get into. Stephen Jones was on with the KNC Masterpiece earlier. He talked about probably not a trade up scenario, more likely a trade back scenario is what the Cowboys would be looking at if the opportunity presented itself. I just don't know who it would be. I mean, we broke this down during NFL News of the Day. The quarterbacks, you'd think that people would be wanting to move up for if possible. But otherwise, you've really just got to have somebody there that people want to move up for. And actually, Blogging the Boys had some scenarios that could trigger a potential trade back opportunity for the Cowboys. The quarterback, of course, last chance maybe to get an elite offensive tackle. Could you see a run on some of these offensive tackles? Maybe you do get Will Campbell go to the Patriots. Could Armin Membu go to the Jets at 7? And then Kelvin Banks goes off the board to the Bears. So now you've got teams like Miami, Arizona, Seattle. They could be looking to add an offensive tackle. Are they looking at and saying, man, our last first round grade is Josh Simmons? And now we move up and you could get maybe a third round pick from one of those teams to go ahead and swap a corner. Could we see a jump in corners? You know, last year was the Terrion Arnold move from the Lions when it came them moving up and the Cowboys ended up sliding back a couple of spots and taking Tyler Guyton. I don't know this year's draft if that's going to happen, but if you end up having Will Johnson and Jahdae Barron surprisingly going early, that could open up some conversations there. And then receiver. Maybe there is a team that's fallen in love with a Matthew Golden. Do they call in? They'd probably be moving ahead of the Cowboys would be the issue. Mm-hmm. You'd think it'd be San Francisco they'd be calling or Chicago they'd be calling. But I don't know. It just doesn't seem likely to me that the Cowboys would be in a trade back beneficial area.
Yeah, I don't see teams really doing the thing where they want to move up. But that is, I would be, if I'm the Cowboys and I'm on the clock, I'm taking it down to the final seconds until I have to turn that card in to see is anybody going to muster it up to try and give us a call here? Because that would be the ideal scenario.
Well, you got to lay the chum in the water. And that's what you do next week. You just get on the horn, you start talking to all your buddies and say, listen, if you're thinking about bailing, you know, hey, you know, we're thinking about potentially bailing, but you know, Looks like we got David Hellman on the line.
Oh, Davey Dave. Dave Hellman, Fox Sports, joining us now here on 105.3 The Fan. Dave, how the hell are you? What's the weather like in Cali, my friend?
I'm wonderful, guys. It's the same as it always is, you know, and it's a cliche, but it's true. There's not really seasons. It just kind of fluctuates between 65 and 80, depending on the day.
So we're getting closer to this NFL draft, but we got big news. Tyron Smith will be signing a one-day deal with the Cowboys. We'll have a presser tomorrow. He is retiring. So now we got Zach Martin and Tyron Smith in the same offseason. Maybe they can go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame together. That would be incredible. Do you have thoughts on Tyron's career and maybe your favorite Tyron Smith moment?
Oh, man. You know, really, it's just surreal. Zach and Tyron both. I mean, Zach, I guess, was the first player whose, like, entire career I covered. I actually went to the airport to pick him up the day that he arrived in Dallas, which was pretty cool. Tyron, obviously, got there a little bit before me. My favorite Tyron Smith memory was probably running into him over the summer one year. Like, you know, like you run into like a teacher like during the summer and you're like, oh my God, yeah, like you have a life, I have a life outside of school. It was kind of like that, where I ran into him like out just doing his thing one summer, and he was telling me about all the like appointments and stuff that he does during the summer to get ready for a season, like, you know, doctor's appointments, PT appointments, all this type of stuff, and how it was like, you know, it took up weeks of his life. And you just don't really think about it. It's kind of out of sight, out of mind. I mean, we know players do all this maintenance to their body, but you don't actually get to see it or hear that much about it. And he was just kind of telling me about his routine. I was like, holy crap, dude, like the stuff you have to do to be ready. And then we know he battled injuries anyway. Like, that's how physical it is playing offensive line, that you can do all of that. And, you know, you're getting in a minor car crash like 40 or 50 times a week. There's only so much you can do. He's one of the toughest dudes I've ever been around. I think he's a Hall of Famer. Ironically, I think it sucks for him that he's going in at the same time as Zach, because Zach has the better case. And if only five guys can get in, then I don't know if they're going to put two guys in the same position group from the same team in the Hall of Fame at the same time. It would be really cool. But I mean, if you're choosing between the two, I think you're going to take Zach Martin. So I think it's kind of ironic that Zach might ultimately hurt his case as a first ballot guy. But I'm very confident he'll get in, and I think it would be well deserved. Like I said, it's surreal. But I'm really happy for him on a legendary career.
Hey, Hellman, does the draft start at 2 at Cleveland or at 9 at New Orleans?
I think it starts at 3, to be honest with you.
Oh, you're going to throw the Giants in here, huh?
Yeah, I think so, because, I mean, look, we don't know anything at the end of the day, but I'm growing more and more confident that Cleveland's just going to bow up and take – whichever they prefer between Hunter and Carter. I don't know for sure. I would guess.
Oh, Travis, I think you're Hunter. Onto something there. I think you're onto it there. Yeah.
I mean, look, Cleveland's, they got to deal with the Deshaun Watson money. They're going to be dealing with that for at least another year. They brought Joe Flacco back in addition to trading Kenny Pickett. So they're kind of covered in that sense. So I think Cleveland is going to just take the guy that they love and worry about quarterback later. And New York might do that too, but if you get all the way down to 3, trading up to 3 gets a little bit less expensive. If Shedeur Sanders is there, I mean, I think New Orleans is somebody you got to think about. Even with Geno Smith under contract, I'm not writing off Vegas as a Shedeur Sanders destination. So trading up from 6 to 3 sounds very palatable for the Raiders. Mm-hmm. You got to worry about the Saints. And then the Giants part of it is, do you take, let's say that maybe they don't love Abdul Carter as much as we guess that they do, for whatever reason. Maybe they don't. And so maybe they're a little more open for business, the same way that Cleveland is, thinking like, hey, we got Russ, we can go a year before we figure this out. Let's decide what we're going to do about Brian Daboll before we draft a quarterback. So I think it kind of starts at 3. I think, if I had to guess today, I think we're talking Cam Ward followed by Travis Hunter, And then it's up to New York whether they, I mean, do they take a quarterback themselves? Are they open for business? That's kind of where I see things getting wacky.
Dave Hellman, Fox NFL, with us here in the G-Bag Nation. What's your ideal scenario for the Cowboys at 12? Are you all about just whatever receiver's there? Golden, Tet, that seems to be the two most prominent names.
No, my whole thing with this draft is trying to keep as open of a mind as possible. I mean, the Cowboys have too many needs for me to lock in on one guy. I mean, I think drafting one position group, no matter what, is a mistake most of the time, but especially when you have as much work still to do as the Cowboys have, and there should be good value. You know, I mean, you could conceivably, outside of Travis Hunter, who's obviously a unique deal, but you could conceivably get the best corner in the draft at 12. If an offensive lineman slips, you could get an offensive lineman that you potentially feel really great about. Pass rusher one is going to be long gone, obviously, but there will be two or three edge rushers you should be really excited about. And then that's without mentioning the receivers and obviously Ashton Jeanty. I think there's so many directions you could go in. I lean toward receiver because I think the Cowboys skill group is borderline embarrassing by NFL standards. But if it falls the right way, you know, like I said, if one of these offensive tackles that's not supposed to be there falls, or if Will Johnson is there, who I really like, I know Brian's worried about his speed, but I really like him. If that guy's there, I take a hard look at Will Johnson. Depending on the edge rusher, I think it would depend, but you could talk me into that. So there's four or five different directions I'm comfortable going in, but I would be really excited to come away from this with Tet McMillan, Golden, even if it was Luther or Igbuka, because we get stuck into this mode every year where we think that every team sees the stack the way that we all do. Mm. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Cowboys like a different receiver more than we're giving them credit for. And, yeah. You know, if it's Burden or Igbuka, I'd be A-okay with that too. I just need a guy who can start from day one. And I really feel like all four of those main guys could do that.
David, I know that, I mean, you're out there and you're studying guys, you know, you were such a great asset to the draft show and through the history of it though. Do you have like Will Johnson, maybe it's an unfair question, but do you have Will Johnson as your number one corner? If you were to put together a board,
you know me, Barry. Yeah, I don't have a board. I leave that to
No, I know that. And that's why, I mean, I asked the question in a way because I wanted to see how committed you really were to Will Johnson. If I could talk you out of that.
Here's my thing. Like, I don't have a board. I don't pretend to have these guys in an order. But what I do is the names that I need to know, I flip on a couple of games, two or three games, and I'm like, oh, yeah, he can do this. He can do that.
Yeah.
He's hanging with that guy. He's playing Texas here, and he's staying with this guy. He's playing Ohio State, and he looks great. He's got good hands. So I don't have him ranked over anybody.
Okay.
I just know he plays a position that the Cowboys need that not a lot of people are talking about as a need, in my opinion. Yeah. And I think he could step in and do the job. I mean, corner's a tough learning curve, obviously, but he could step in and not be a total liability from day one. And I think there's huge value in that. And it's the type of stuff we used to argue about all the time. But with a pick this big, I want a guy that throws the ball, catches the ball, affects the quarterback, or affects the receiver. I mean, those big money positions. I know you don't want to window dress your board, but you want the most valuable impact possible and the guys who you're going to get the most cost-effective deal from. I mean, if Will Johnson or if a pass rusher plays at an all-pro level quickly, it's a bargain. And so that's why I gravitate toward a guy like that more so than having him stacked up in a certain way.
See, with Will Johnson, I kind of look at it as buying a stock. I don't know everything about the company. You know, you're asking me to pay millions of dollars for a stock that I don't know everything about. And that's the thing that scares me, David.
But you trust the tape, am I right, my friend?
No, trust the tape, absolutely, but through my life, I've been able to, I don't know anything about metrics. I don't know anything about ceilings or floors. I always was the tape. But those numbers did mean something to me at one time. You know what I'm saying?
I don't want to say the numbers are meaningless. They're definitely not meaningless.
And but it's about to be, David, we're about to draft. We get on these teams for bad drafts, but they don't have all the information to make the best decisions. That's where I'm learning at right now.
And you know what? You hate ambiguity, so I can understand why this bothers you so much. But
he's a good player, David. God, this guy's a good player.
The guy's got a ton of tape of him playing in one of the toughest conferences in college football, Michigan, playing in the
playoffs.
He's
also banged up, too. He's banged up like these other guys. I've got a Notre Dame corner that I love that's got a bad hip. I got a East Carolina corner that's got a bad knee. You know, I'm that's the tape to me, David. That's the tape.
Nothing makes you more upset than falling in love with a player that's got some sort of red flag that you can't move past. It's always been fun to watch you get frustrated by that.
I die, David. I die every time I do this. A little part of me dies.
Maybe you get him at a discount later, you know?
That blue star special.
I remember. I'm not saying this is going to happen to Will Johnson, but I'll never forget in 2020, you know, that really fun 2020 draft. It was, you know, word got out that they loved Trayvon Diggs.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, oh, I love him, but you can't take him at 17. The value's just not there. Then lo and behold, he's hanging out with him for you in the second round.
Yeah.
Gosh, we can only hope that it's as good as 2020. David Hellman, Fox Sports, with us here in the G-Bag Nation. Thanks so much, man. Keep kicking ass out there in Hollywood.
Appreciate it, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
There he goes, Dave Hellman with us here. Always love talking with Dave. He is the man, the myth, the legend, the one and only Dave Hellman. All right, let's do some top 10 next. It's National Laundry Day. I've got the top 10 worst chores. What are the most disliked chores across America? 877-881-1053. We'll do that next in the Nation.